So we see in this section of Bhagavatam the situation, quite a difficult situation that Kashyapa Muni is put in. See, Kashyapa Muni, he's quite unique because he has two wives. And those wives are completely opposite. On one side he has Diti, who's the mother of the Asuras. And on the other side he has Aditi as his second wife, who's the mother of the Devatas. So it's quite a difficult predicament he's put in sometimes. And he's described as one of the Prajapatis. So actually this was his service on behalf of the Lord, that he had to produce progeny from each of these different types of entities. And we see in the Bhagavatam, he gives similar instructions to both wives, Diti and Aditi. We see later in the 8th canto, his wife Aditi is morose and lamenting because her son Indra and the demigods have been defeated by Balimaraj. And as a result, they lost all their power, they lost their position, they lost all their opulence. And so as it's natural for a mother, she's upset. And Kashyapa Muni, seeing the difficulties that she's put in, asks her how he can help. And so she requests her son to help Indra and the rest of her sons reattain the kingdom. And so then he prescribes to her to perform something called the Bhayarat. And this Bhayarat is a very intricate ritual. It's a ritual that's used to please Vishnu. And as a result, a son is born to her called Vamanadev. Actually, the Supreme Lord himself descended as a son. And so, also now here in the Bhagavatam, in the 6th canto, we see also Diti is morose. The other wife is upset. Because now, Indra has again become king of the heavens, and the demigods have lost their position, and the demons have lost their position. In fact, it's described in this pastime that Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were killed. And so now Diti is upset. And in this whole situation, Diti sees Indra as the enemy. Like for most people, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha are, you know, savage demons. But to a mother, we see that, you know, this principle of love is blind. So she sees them as pious souls. And she sees Indra as the enemy in all of this. In fact, when Indra lost the kingdom, he was worshipping Vishnu, and he was requesting Vishnu to help him. And Vishnu appeared, and he explained to him, you'll reattain the kingdom, but it won't be because of you, it'll be because of Prahlad. When Hiranyakashipu has committed sufficient offenses to Prahlad, I will descend and kill Hiranyakashipu. So even though Diti knows this, she doesn't blame Vishnu, she doesn't blame Prahlad, she blames Indra. And so specifically she requests her husband, who she knows is very powerful, he's a great sage. So she requests him to give her a son that will kill Indra. Now Kashyapa Muni, again we find that he's put in a difficult situation. Because Indra is also his son, and not only that, Indra is a Vaishnava. And to kill Indra would mean that you would commit an aparad, Vaishnava aparad. But Kashyapa Muni, at the same time, he has to fulfill the desires of his wife. So Kashyapa Muni, being very intelligent, he asks her to perform the Bhayarat. And the Bhayarat she had to perform for one whole year. And it was said that if she made a mistake in this Bhayarat, that then instead of an enemy of Indra being born, a friend or a follower of Indra would be born. So specifically, Kashyapa Muni outlined this particular ritual because he knew she would probably make a mistake. And secondly, by performing this ritual, because this ritual was actually for Vishnu, it was a Vaishnava ritual, he knew that she would be purified by performing this Bhayarat. And as a result, she would lose her enmity towards Indra. So anyway, it's described that she performed this rat, she performed this ritual. and she was performing it accurately. And Indra heard about this rat that she was performing. And so he decided to come and also serve her. But it wasn't a mood of selfless service. The Bhagavatam describes, just as a hunter may dress in deer skin to attract the attention of the deer and serve the deer in order to kill him. Similarly, Indra served Diti. And anyway, it's described, because the ritual was very difficult to perform, she became thin, she became weak, she became emancipated. And one time, she took prasad and forgot to wash her mouth and her hands and feet and fell asleep. So Indra, seeing this, took that opportunity and entered the womb of Diti, where we meet the pastime here in this today's verse. Seeing the child, Indra, using his thunderbolt, chopped the child into 7 pieces. But because the child was being produced from a sacrifice to Vishnu, the child didn't die. In fact, 7 children were now present. And so Indra was astonished seeing this. So he chopped the child up into 7 more pieces. Actually, he chopped each child into 7 pieces, which made 49 children. But they were still alive. And so Indra was again astonished. So Indra was about to again chop the children up further. But then they cried to him and said, "We are not your enemies, Indra, we are your followers." And so Indra realized this. And so then it's described that Indra left the womb with the children, and Diti woke up. And before Diti was Indra and 49 children. So she was a little astonished to see this. And so then she said to Indra, "Tell me the truth, what happened?" And it's actually interesting, if you analyze the words that Diti used to refer to Indra, she says, "My dear son." Now, she was performing this whole sacrifice because she wanted to kill Indra. But because the sacrifice was for Vishnu, she was purified, and as a result, she developed motherly feelings towards Indra. And so she refers to him as "my dear son." And in fact, Indra also, he says to Diti, "My dear mother." So this is quite amazing, and Prabhupada makes the point in the purport, in the further purport on, he says that this is the result of worshipping Vishnu. One becomes purified. And we see this in the example of Diti and Indra. Later on in the pastime, Prabhupada also quotes this famous verse, "Om apavitro pavitro va, sarvavastam gatopi va, yasmarat punarik yaksham, sabhyan bhyantara suchi." This is quoted also by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. I think it comes from the Garuda Purana. But it explains, "Om apavitro pavitro va, whether one is pure or impure, sarvavastam gatopi va, even if one has passed through all conditions of material life, yasmarat pundarik yaksham, if one meditates or remembers pundarik yaksham, means Krishna, the lotus-eyed one, sabhyan bhyantara suchi, one becomes cleaned internally and externally." So this is the potency of meditating on the Supreme Lord. In this section also, in one of the purports, Prabhupada refers to another pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where this point of meditating on the Lord and that bringing purification is exemplified in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And it's quite interesting, if you analyze that pastime, Prabhupada draws many lessons from the life of Dhruva Maharaj. In fact, he describes Dhruva Maharaj as an acharya. He says he's an acharya. An acharya means we should attempt to follow in the footsteps of such a person. He actually describes, he says that we shouldn't try to imitate the austerities of Dhruva Maharaj, because his austerities were quite extraordinary. But we should try and follow the principles from the life of Dhruva Maharaj. He also quotes his Guru Maharaj. He says that if someone is sincere and serious as Dhruva Maharaj, he is guaranteed to go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. In his humility, he also mentions how, "If I have a disciple as strong as Dhruva, he will carry me back to Vaikuntha." It's also quite interesting, in Chaitanya Lila, Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhara Pandit would often sit together and relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. They would sit, and Lord Chaitanya would request Gadadhara Pandit to recite the Bhagavatam. And he would, in particular, request Gadadhara Pandit to recite two pastimes, again and again. Anyone know the pastimes? I mean, one's obvious, but Prahlad Maharaj and the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj. So we can understand that these pastimes are important. And just to kind of just remind devotees of the pastime, it's described that Dhruva Maharaj, he entered his father's room, and his father was on the throne, sitting on the throne. And he had his brother on his lap, Uttama. And next to him was his stepmother, Suruchi. And so Dhruva Maharaj, 5 years old, entered his father's room, and he wanted to join his younger brother on the lap of his father. But the Bhagavatam describes that neither was he welcomed, nor was he shown any affection. And Suruchi, who was the king's favorite wife, took advantage of this. And she began to condemn Dhruva. And she explained that, because you're not born from my womb, in this life, neither will you be able to sit on your father's throne, nor will you be able to sit on his lap. And she instructed him actually that, you should, if you want to improve your position, then go to the forest and worship Narayan. And if he favors you, then request him to allow yourself to die and be reborn in my womb. So Dhruva, he was a Kshatriya. And hearing this, he was deeply upset. In fact, it said that he began to cry, and his tears were hot with anger. He was trembling. As we know from the Gita, for a man of honor, dishonor is worse than death. So he ran to his mother, Suniti. And Suniti asked what happened, and he explained, and others explained. And she was in a difficult position, because she knew that she wasn't the favorite wife. So she said, actually, your stepmother is right. You should go to Narayan. And it's quite interesting, Prabhupada paraphrases the words of Suniti, and he explains that Suniti was his mother, and it's the nature of a mother to want to help her son. And Prabhupada explains that Suniti's mood was, actually, I can't help you, but Krishna, whose kindness is more than millions of mothers, he can help you. So anyway, Dhruva goes to the forest, and on the way he meets Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, he tests Dhruva Maharaj, and he tests his determination. But Dhruva Maharaj is insistent that I have to see Narayan, and I have to seek his favor. And he requests Narada Muni to prescribe a certain penance or austerity so that he can attain a kingdom greater than his grandfather and greater than his great-grandfather. Now, his grandfather and great-grandfather weren't ordinary personalities. His grandfather was Manu, who was the emperor of the entire world. And his great-grandfather was Brahma. So in fact, Dhruva, he wanted a kingdom greater than anyone's kingdom in the entire three worlds. So he went to the forest, and particularly he went to Madhavan, and he performed austerities. He performed Ashtanga Yoga near the river Yamuna. And he also chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he performed this for 6 months. And the details of the penance are described in the pages of the Bhagavatam. And in 6 months, the Lord appeared to him. And seeing the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj quotes a famous verse. Stani bilasi tapasisthitoham. That he explains that desiring a high position, stani bilasi, I'm performing great severe austerities, tapasi. Tvam praptavan deva munindra guyam. But performing these austerities, I have come before you. Who is, and he explains that having the Lord come before an individual is extremely rare. Even great sages, saints, great kings, great demigods do not attain the darshan of the Lord. Then he said, Gacham, which in one, Abhi Divya Ratnam. He explains that although I've been searching for, he compares, you know, attaining a high position in the material world to pieces of glass. Instead, I have attained you, who he compares to the most valuable jewel. So we see, just by performing this worship to Vishnu, his entire consciousness has changed. He compares attaining a kingdom that's greater than Lord Brahma's kingdom to a piece of glass, compared to devotional service, which he compares to the most valuable jewel. And he says, Swamin ketato smi varam na yache. He explains, because the Lord comes and he says, what benediction would you like? Because he knew of Dhruva Maharaj's desires. And Dhruva Maharaj says, because you have come before me, I no longer have any desires. I am completely satisfied. So this is the power of devotional service. And this is why it's recommended in the Bhagavatam that whether you have material desires, whether you don't have material desires, whether you desire material liberation, you should still worship Vishnu. Also, in the third canto, we see in the pastimes of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, the same principle being brought up. Kardama Muni, he's a Prajapati. And his spiritual master, his father, Lord Brahma, asks him to assist him in populating the universe. So, before he engages in this service, he performs austerities. It's described he performed austerities for 10,000 years near the river Bindu Sarova. And his internal desire was that he wanted a wife of like disposition. So he performed these austerities for 10,000 years and the Lord appeared before him. And when the Lord appeared before him, Prabhupada describes that Kardama Muni was in an awkward position. Because through these austerities, he became purified. So then he realized that actually nothing material should be asked from the Lord. But Jiva Goswami explains that Kardama Muni's desire wasn't a gross desire, gross material desire, it was a subtle material desire. And it was actually in line with the order given from Lord Brahma. So it's described that he was a little embarrassed nevertheless. And Prabhupada describes in that purport, he says that generally, if someone wants a partner, then they worship Uma. I think it's another name of Durga. But the advantage, he explains, of worshipping the Supreme Lord Krishna, if you have a material desire, is that you become purified. So again, this same point is made again. Again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you see this point, that even if you have a material desire, one should go to the Lord. And it's quite interesting. Prabhupada makes two other interesting statements in the purport to this section. He says that the Lord, he never disappoints a sincere devotee, regardless of what he wants. But he never allows that desire, if he fulfills that desire, he never allows it to be detrimental to his devotional service. So if you have a material desire and you go to the Supreme Lord and he fulfills it, and if you're sincere, then the fulfillment of that desire will not be an impediment to your devotional service. And it's quite interesting. Kardama Muni, all he requested was a wife of like disposition. And the Lord, knowing his desire, had already made arrangements to fulfill his desire. He says to him, I already knew of your desire, and in a few days Manu will come and he will offer his daughter for you so you can have her as your wife. And so instead of just getting a wife of like disposition, Kardama Muni received the daughter of the emperor of the world. And so Prabhupada also explains in the purport that the Lord, when fulfilling your material desires, he fulfills them to a degree beyond your expectation. So these points and pastimes show us why we should, if we do have material desires, why we should go to the Supreme Lord to fulfill them. And basically these three pastimes depict devotional service in the mode of passion. Kapiladev describes that devotional service can be performed in different modes of nature. One has to be careful if he's going to perform devotional service in the modes of nature, because there's certain natural dangers that come from that. See, devotional service in the mode of ignorance is done in a certain mood. It's described that one who performs devotional service in the mode of ignorance, he thinks himself better than others. It's described, some of the qualities described are envy, one is proud, one may be violent, one may hate other devotees as a result of that. And Vishnu Chakri Thakur, he describes in that section that if a devotee does not have good character, he should be avoided. If a Vaishnava does not have good character, he should be avoided. He explains all Vaishnavas should be respected, but Vaishnavas who do not have good character, or who may perform devotional service in the mode of ignorance, should be avoided. The example of Daksha is sometimes given as an example of a devotee who performs devotional service in the mode of ignorance. We also hear in the Bhagavatam the pastime involving Daksha. It's described that there's a sacrifice to Vishnu being performed. And all the great demigods are there, all the great sages are present. And Daksha walks in. Now Daksha, he is described as the chief of all the Prajapatis. He's the greatest Prajapati. And as a result of that position, he became a little proud. And he walks into the assembly, and everyone stands up to offer respects. But one person doesn't offer respects. Lord Shiva doesn't offer respects. And it's described that Lord Shiva, he was at that point in time, he was absorbed in meditation to the Lord. We also hear in the Bhagavatam how he's the greatest Vaishnava, Vaishnava Nam, Yata Shambhu. So Daksha, seeing that Lord Shiva didn't offer respects to him, he becomes angry. And so he begins to criticize Lord Shiva in front of everyone. And he criticizes the way he dresses, he criticizes the way the people that he associates with. And like this, he goes on and on and on. He even criticizes his father Brahma, because Lord Shiva married the daughter of Daksha, Sati, and it was on the request of Brahma that Daksha allowed Sati to marry Lord Shiva. And so he criticizes Brahma even. He says, just as the Vedas shouldn't be shown to a Shudra, similarly, Shiva shouldn't have received Sati. So like this, he criticizes and goes on and on. And because of that, he commits Vaishnava Aparadha. So this is the danger with, if we try to aspire for something material and we attain it and we become proud, the danger is that we can commit offenses. We also see the same principle being shown in the life of Indra. Time and time again, through the Bhagavatam, we hear how Indra becomes proud and puffed up because of the opulence or power or position that the Lord is giving to him. So this is devotional service in the mode of ignorance. There's also devotional service in the mode of passion, where you do things because you want to attain something from the Lord. You know, it's like, God, give me my daily bread. Or we see Dhruva Maharaj, Diti, we see Kadama Muni, all of them approaching the Lord for something. And it's quite interesting, if you analyze, look at the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, when you hear his prayers, he regrets asking for something material from the Lord. He actually feels ashamed, and he feels disgusted with himself. And it's explained that, see, if he didn't have a material desire, he could have gone back to Godhead or attained Dhruva Loka immediately. But because he did have a material desire, he had to wait 36,000 years and be king on this planet. So he was regretful. He even explains and he presents to the Lord, perhaps the demigods, they conspired against me. Because sometimes we see that the demigods, seeing someone else performing major austerities, they become a little fearful that their position is going to be taken. So he says, perhaps they polluted my intelligence. But then later in the prayers, he retracts that same statement and says, ultimately I was just put under the illusionary energy. And Prabhupada says, in other words, when engaged in devotional service, one must be free from material desires. Otherwise, like Dhruva Maharaj, one will lament So we may have material desires, we may approach the Lord may fulfill those material desires. But then what we realize and understand is that instead of receiving the Lord, we receive those material desires. The point is we missed out on receiving devotional service to the Lord. So this is the danger with performing devotional service in the mode of passion. And then you have devotional service in the mode of goodness. Now, devotional service in the mode of goodness, this is performed in a mood of detachment. It means you're detached from the results of your service. But there's one problem. Someone who performs devotional service in the mode of goodness, he tries to avoid those services that cause trouble in one's life, right? Sometimes we pick and choose what services we like to do because, you know, a certain service, you know, you have to deal with this devotee, or you have to, you know, it's kind of like you have to go outside and deal with materialists, or you have to stand in the cold and do book distribution. So sometimes we may avoid these services because they're troublesome. So this is described as a symptom of perhaps devotional service in the mode of goodness. And in each of these services types of devotion, there's still this mentality of being a separatist, which basically means the false ego. Whether it's devotional service in the mode of ignorance, devotional service in the mode of passion, or devotional service in the mode of goodness, there's still this point of, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, whether it's gross or whether it's subtle. So what we're encouraged to do is perform devotional service, which is pure devotional service. There's one interesting pastime connected with Prabhupada. There was one devotee who was serving in Africa, and his service was troublesome and difficult, and he had a taste for bhajan, so he decided to go to Mayapur and just engage in, you know, chanting, etc. Prabhupada was also in Mayapur at that same time, and so devotees related to Prabhupada what this devotee was doing. He was chanting 120 rounds in a hut in a forest, and he was sleeping 2 hours a day. He was eating very little food. And so Prabhupada didn't comment. And the next day, devotees were on a morning walk, and they updated Prabhupada on the latest austerities that this devotee was performing. And this devotee had now decided that he wouldn't associate with any devotees. He didn't want to waste time in idle talk. He would just chant and just, you know, minimum sleeping and eating. And so Prabhupada heard about this again. And this time he commented, he said, so first he wanted to perform bhajan near a river. Now he wants to perform bhajan in a forest. And then Prabhupada threw his hand out and he dismissed the whole idea and he said, nonsense. He said, as soon as you say, I want, this is sense gratification. So this is the point of conditional service. Lord Chaitanya, we see, he came to teach pure devotional service. We see in the Shishastakam, Shishivara Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Chaitanya explains in the Shishastakam prayers, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajag Jagadish Kameye Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahoitaki Dwai. That devotional service should be performed without conditions, any conditions. Lord Chaitanya says, I do not desire wealth, I do not desire beautiful women, I do not desire followers. He just explains that I only desire your causeless devotional service life after life. Which means there's no desire even for liberation. There's no desire even to leave the material world. This is pure devotional service. Rupa Goswami also explains a similar principle in the Nectar of Devotion. Anya bilasita sunyam kyana kamadi na vitram anukalanenu kishnanu shilanam bhakti rutma. And this verse explains how devotional service should be performed without any karma or jnana. It should be completely free from any motivation. And this verse is actually described in the Nectar Devotion as the Paribhas Sutra. It's the verse by which all other verses are built on. So this is that line. We're aspiring for pure devotional service. We may have many material desires, no doubt we do, because of our past lives, our previous actions before we came to devotional service. But the mood should be not that we just accept those desires and approach the Lord and try and get those desires fulfilled, but we should struggle to come to the pure platform. This is what it means by sincerity. And in the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, Prabhupada again explains this point in one of the purports. He says, a devotee must be very sincere in devotional service. Then although there may be many wrongs, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. So if a devotee is very sincere, even though he may make mistakes, you know, we may sometimes fall down again. But if we're very sincere, the Lord will help us and come to this, and help us come to this highest platform. Prabhupada also explains, he says that pure devotees only want the privilege of serving. If we desire anything else, it's a sign of our misfortune. So, we may have material desires, but we should be careful that we don't become distracted in devotional life and forget that we should try and aspire for pure devotion. Ultimately, our desire is just to become an instrument, a puppet, like we in when Prabhupada was coming to New York and we hear about the prayers on the Jaladuta ship. His only desire to Lord Krishna was, let me become an instrument. Whether material things come or not, my main desire is to become an instrument. And we see that when we have this desire to just be an instrument, if it's conducive for our devotional service, the Lord will provide material facilities. Like we see, Srila Prabhupada didn't desire anything material, but so many things came to him. He had temples, beautiful temples. We have the manor here. It's one of the most opulent temples in ISKCON. Prabhupada had followers. Prabhupada had fame. Prabhupada would travel the world so many times. So all these things came. If you look at the lives of the Goswamis, they didn't desire anything. Like you see Rupa Goswami, he would stay under a different tree every night. And he was simply satisfied serving his deity, Govindaji. But because the Lord saw that he would be undisturbed by any material opulence, he supplied a beautiful temple so that he could perform his worship. Actually, it's described the temple that was built was one of the most beautiful temples in North India. That was until Aurangzeb and the others came and they removed all the jewels from the temple. And the temple was, I think, 4 stories higher, actually, than it is presently is. It was one of the highest buildings in North India. And Aurangzeb, seeing that this building was higher than his own personal building, he ordered his soldiers to demolish 4 stories. Even Sanatan Goswami, same thing. He was serving Madan Mohan. And the Lord saw that his desires were completely pure and he had no material motivation. Yet still, he supplied him material opulences, i.e. a new temple, to facilitate his service. So this is the point. The mood of us as practitioners in ISKCON should be that we should just try and aspire for pure devotional service, despite material desires, rather than be insincere devotees who have material desires and approach the Lord to fulfill those material desires. And we see through the pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam that these points are brought up again and again. But if someone is very attached, there is a but if someone is very attached to fulfilling the material desires, and if you by preaching to them to perform pure devotional service, you break their faith completely, which means their only alternative is not believing in God and trying in their own way to fulfill their material desires, then we should encourage someone to approach the Lord in this mood. And this is the same point that's brought up in the Bhagavad Gita in the 3rd chapter, that Krishna says, do not disrupt the minds of those that are materially attached. So these are the points that come up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have a few minutes left. Does anyone have any questions or comments?